podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to our final World Cup Zero Ducks Given, not very daily, because the World Cup final has finished just moments ago at the time of recording. Actually, I say moments ago, not really, because the ceremony after the game took bloody ages, but the ceremony has finally finished. It felt like an eternity before Pat Cummins could finally actually lift the trophy, but Australia won by 6 wickets, in the end quite comfortably. Of course, this World Cup that's not really had many exciting games petered out into quite a comfortable victory for Australia by 6 wickets with 7 overs remaining, largely thanks to an unbelievable innings from Travis Head, who finished on 137, one of the great ever World Cup innings. Daniel Norcross, you've been sat at home back in England, back in Blighty, watching it from the comfort of your own home all day. And what do you make of it? I mean, credit has to go to Australia because a lot of people saying they'd made the wrong call at the toss when they decided to put India in, but it's looking like a bit of a masterstroke now.
Yeah, it did look very strange at the toss, but then they're the ones who've been gazing at this pitch all this time. They've also been the ones who are out there, so they know what dew is and isn't likely. I mean, people said there was quite a lot of dew yesterday, so they might have been thinking a little bit about that. They might also have been looking at how it was quite a slow, raggedy pitch. Wasn't it a bit like the Lord's final when England won in 2019? I don't think it was really a pitch that suited India, actually, but much like the Lord's pitch didn't suit England, so that was a bit of a shame for them. But I found it an incredibly compelling game. You said it petered out, and it did. You're right, the last sort of 40 runs or so, it felt completely inevitable. But I found it really compelling watch. Now, India getting off to such a fast start, and then the fear that they've got in themselves of their last four, their tail being so poor, that they feel they have to consolidate for as long as they did. And they did so slowly. There were 6 boundaries after the end of the 10th over. Unbelievable. Was it 6? Was it even 4? I think it was 6. There were long periods. It went over an hour without scoring a boundary. And this was all really because the makeup of their side, which is what we've always been saying is their one weakness, is that they've got a really long tail. Now, the thing was that they'd scored quite a few runs early on. They went really hard, really fast. So, yes, they'd lost the wickets, but, you know, they put Surya Kumar Yadav down below Jadeja because they didn't trust him to bat like a batter and, you know, have a full innings. This is a guy with a good first-class record. I thought there was that was fascinating to watch and seeing how the pitch gripped and whatnot. And then 240, you thought, it can't be enough, can it, except that this is the best seam bowling attack in the world. And then the start of Australia's innings was the maddest, like, 15 balls you've ever seen. The first 3.5 overs, they were like 8 extras or something in Shami's first over. Shami opening the bowling instead of Siraj, which was odd. Why change anything that you were doing before that was so perfect? Siraj, so brilliant with the new ball. But then 2 of the worst shots you've ever seen to get out. I mean, Warner's shot to get out was just scrambled brain madness. I mean, it might be a worse shot than Stokes's against Shami. And then Mitch Marsh getting out to a regulation shit ball outside the off stump with a little feather through, short and wide. Again, it was kind of like mad cricket. And then Smith not referring when his superpower is he gets outside the line every time. And this is Smith, who always refers. 47 for 3, just assumed that this is how it was going to work. Crowd fervid, players going berserk, Kohli with the mad eyes, you know. 47 for 3, surely not. Then we discover what Labuschagne is for in this team. It didn't make any sense at the start of the tournament. What are you having Smith and Labuschagne in the side for? No one could really make that work. And yet, you know, when Head wasn't playing, there was just about sense in it. When Head was playing, it made none. So then Head and Labuschagne together, two completely contrasting styles, put on this amazing partnership. Now, I don't think I'm just sort of trying to make up for the fact that it was an inevitable result that I found the game fascinating. I thought it was actually completely fascinating, and yet it petered out into mundanity with the attendant perfection of Glenn Maxwell hitting the winning runs. I mean, there was a lot to recommend that match. Almost nothing if you're Indian.
I was on mute as ever, but I was sitting there listening intently. because I mean,
were you?
But I mean, it was a fascinating day's cricket in terms of the standard of cricket was unbelievable. Watching Bumrah and Shami opening up the bowling against that Australian opening attack and the chaos of the first few overs was fascinating. And you're right, the way the Indian innings ebbed and flowed, they were on 80 after 10 overs and then limped to 240. Am I right in saying Rahul hit one boundary in his score of 66 off 100 deliveries? I think he hit 1-4, which is a mad, mad white ball inning. So it was bizarre and fascinating in that way. It was just a bit of a shame that it was quite comfortable in the end. But really, Australia, I hate... Do you know, I said to you on the daily we did the other day that I was a bit torn about this final because I didn't want anyone to win. And I woke up this morning and I really actually realised I did want Australia to win and it felt dirty. But actually, as the game got underway, I thought, I want Australia to win this. It would just be quite funny in India, in front of all these Indian fans and this tournament that feels tailor-made and custom-made for India to win it. It would be quite funny. But then as the game started heading towards an Australia victory, I started feeling really dirty about the whole thing and then wanted India to win. And I was waiting for this magical spell from one of the quicks to come and turn it round again, which never really arrived. But I have to give credit to Australia because of we wrote them off at the start of this tournament. Everyone did. They lost to South Africa just before they came into the series. The theory was they didn't have the power in the middle order with Smith and Labuschagne. And the theory was that they didn't have the bowling without, well, they didn't slow bowling to win in India. And they lost their first two games of the tournament. At that point, I genuinely thought they might not make it out the group here. They've then won 9 in a row, including beating this supposedly unbeatable India team in their own backyard to win it. It's sort of one of the most mad World Cup campaigns ever. And it was sort of all down to Travis Head in the end. He's 137. I mean, that's as good as innings you'll ever see. Everyone talked about that Glenn Maxwell innings earlier in the tournament, but to do it in the final in India against probably the best white ball side you could possibly imagine, this India side. I mean, it's as good a cricket innings as you'll ever see, isn't it, Daniel Norcross? It's literally possibly the best ODI innings of all time.
That's surely still Maxwell's double 100 against Afghanistan.
But the context, but I don't know anymore. Well, I don't know what's real anymore.
I think in the contest, you got a point. I mean, it was extraordinary, really, where nobody else was going over a run of ball apart from Rohit Sharma at the beginning of India's innings. He didn't just play outlandish shots. He didn't play any of the percentages at all. So when Bumrah comes back on for a vital spell, you know that he's the strike bowler out there to take wickets, and you put this partnership of around about 100 together. Then you think, and any normal person thinks, right, well, we can see off two overs of Bumrah, and they'll be forced to go back to the other bowlers and we can milk them because the scoring rate's not very large. You know, if you needed 8, 9 and over, it's a different equation. They needed 4.5, 5. Head decides to climb into Bumrah, playing some unbelievably risky shots. And it was simultaneously no need. If he got out, it would have looked incredibly stupid. And yet, it was part of the brilliance of his innings. It's like he's doing stuff that we don't fully understand. He's either the luckiest human being who ever existed, because he got away with quite a few, as he has done against England many times and in the World Test Championship final. Or he's doing stuff that we just can't quite compute. He played an innings on a different plane from everybody else in that match today, on a pitch that made bowlers look good and batters look not great. I thought India bowled a bit too short because they got seduced. I mean, Travis Head plays this rope-a-dope with us all, in which we all think we've got a bowl short at him, don't we? Every team comes, oh, Travis Head, let's go bang it in at him. And then Travis Head smashes it. He gets so much practice at the short ball. He's probably the best player of the short ball in the world. He practices it constantly in the net. And he turns up out there and everybody just bowls it at him. He's living in a short ball wonderland. It's ridiculous, but he's loving every minute of it. And I loved it. I thought it was an incredibly great innings. And you know, did not a bit of your heart melt, Toby? At the time, I felt really quite happy for quite a lot of them, especially for Maxie, but also for Travis and Mitchell Marsh and Mitchell Stark, whose wife's donated some money to struggling Australian netballers. I mean, I know that's not quite the same as, you know, starting a hospital in Ethiopia, but it shows a generosity of spirit. And
Don't you hate when you're at home and you're sat at home and you're trying to eat your dinner and then those sad adverts come on the telly where you have to raise money for Australian netball players? you know.
Yeah, because they're in a dispute with their board. I know.
Every time I click my fingers, an Australian netball player can't make it in time to catch the bus to her next tournament. You know, all that stuff. Yeah. I'm glad she's raising money for. Well, there's nothing more important in the world happening right now than, of course, the plight of the Australian netball team.
All right. Well, I realize that wasn't the perfect example, but little Adam Zampa and his obsession with coffee and banging his head on the swimming pool. You know, I mean, Pat Cummins, who seems like such a lovely guy with such soft, gentle eyes. You know, you can just put Warner and Smith to one side and all that. You know, Marnus is in his own quirky way an endearing character. So. Look, I mean, we're all great for Australia. Absolutely brilliant. Marvellous. You've got to feel for India because they've won 10 out of 10. And if you were, I mean, I was out in India. Not if you were. I was out in India. And for 47 days, I saw wall-to-wall cricket adverts, Kohli TV, everything you needed to know about what Kohli thought about everything in a million different interviews. The highlights of the cricket from the day before, if India weren't playing, were interspersed with reminders of how well India had previously played. It was probably better than what had happened yesterday. It was entirely, the whole of India was just geared around the Indian cricket team. All the adverts that happened between overs all had Indian cricketers and Bollywood stars. There was a very bizarre advert for a body spray, which I'm going to get to the bottom of, Fog. And if there are any Indian correspondents listening to Zero Ducks, please tell me what the plot of those were, because they're very, very strange. So, you know, you can have gripes about that and say that the whole tournament was all geared up for India and all that. But the human part of you has also got to think, what an unbelievable disappointment that must be, because, you know, it wasn't a World Cup where they can go away from it thinking that final, if only we'd done this a bit differently or that bit differently. They got thrashed, really, by, I mean, it was 6 wickets in the end, but there might as well have been 7, with 7 overs to spare. And the dawning realisation that being the best team in the tournament and winning the first 10 games doesn't automatically make you world champions must be pretty difficult to stomach, you know. And it's another year without a trophy. It's 10 years since they won an ICC trophy, and so many other teams have since. New Zealand, Pakistan, England, Australia, you know. So that must be kind of gutting. And for that crowd there, you could sense it, the silence that came over it as the realisation became ever deeper and stronger. But they have been a magnificent side. I mean, in this tournament, they've been the best side. My fear for them is I'm not sure that we're going to see that team again for obvious reasons, the ages of so many of the people in it. There'll be a few that will still be knocking about, but, you know, Mohammed Shami, tough to see him in the next World Cup, isn't it, really? You never know with Jasprit Bumrah if his body's going to hold up that long. Rohit surely wouldn't be around. Kohli will be antique, although very fit, potentially still playing. Surya Kumar Yadav, no. Rahul, no. So, you know, it must be a bitter pill to swallow.
If people are worried about this 50-over format disappearing, India not winning this World Cup has sped up that process a bit. I think if India had won this tournament, probably would have bought 50 over cricket another decade. But as it is, I don't know. But you're right, it was fascinating watching the crowd. I mean, Travis Head, you know, that innings that was so incredible, when he brought up his 100, it was to basically deafly silence. It was one of the bizarrest spectacles I'd ever seen in cricket. This incredible 100 in a World Cup final. And it seemed to be him and Marnus Labuschagne having a hug and about 15 Australian guys in the changing room. And other than that, it was about 100,000.
Well, you could hear them. You could hear Glenn Maxwell. Yeah, you could hear the
cheering over about 100,000 Indian fans. That's how quiet it was in the stadium when he brought up his 100. So it was fascinating. Well, we'll have a proper debrief of the entire tournament this week when we get Finney back. I just wanted to react to this game really specifically. So we'll do a proper World Cup debrief in the week. But overall, my overall reaction to the World Cup, this whole tournament as a whole, is it's probably the best way to describe it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, when we come to do the full debrief, hopefully I'll be able to convince you that over the last 7 weeks, there have been so many remarkable and brilliant things. We've had a timed out. We've had a double hundred, match-winning double hundred at the score of 297 when his side were 91-7. We've had the highest scoring matches in World Cup history. We've had the Afghans coming good and so nearly beating Australia to make it five wins. We've had the Dutch beating the South Africans. There's been quite a lot of goodness in it. We've also had Mohammed Shami taking seven wickets, taking becoming leading wicket taker, having missed the first four games. But the fact that it's gone on so incredibly long and England was so innovatingly shite does obviously make it difficult to mount a convincing case for this being a World Cup of the Ages if you are English. But I urge you to put your Englishness aside.
Okay, well, I mean, that obviously hasn't helped, but I've made my sound effect for how I'd sum up this World Cup. We'll finish this podcast with your sound effect for how you would describe this World Cup. Mine was, eh.
All right.
Say no more. I'll see you in the week.
Podcast Network.